We begin our class tonight in the name of God transcendent, God omnipresent, God immanent, the indwelling, holy, living Trinity. Becoming aware of our bodies sitting in this room, supported by the chairs. Bring our attention into the body, feeling our feet on the floor, our legs, arms, torso and spine, head. We feel sensation on the outside of the body. We feel sensation, perhaps interiorly inside the body. We breathe into those places that feel tense. Having our attention on sensation throughout our body and our breath. Sensing our body as a whole, relaxed, alive, vibrating. We move our attention more inwardly to the emotional center. Becoming aware of any feelings that are present. Whether peaceful or agitated, just be aware, observe. And then bringing the attention to the intellectual center. To the stream of consciousness. Is our attention getting stuck on any thoughts? To any thoughts? As in centering prayer, we just let go of those, if there are. Come back to the center, back to our bodies. Sensation. Breath. Heartbeat. Presence. I hear now. In the present moment. Awake and alert. And in this state of open receptivity, we listen to Gospel for today with fresh ears, the ears of the work, finding any work ideas or anything that touches us. What is speaking to you tonight? Jesus said to his disciples, "Is a lamp brought in to be placed under a bushel basket or under a bed, and not to be placed on a lampstand? For there is nothing hidden except to be made visible. Nothing is secret except to come to light. Anyone who has ears to hear ought to hear." He also told them, "Take care what you hear. The measure with which you measure will be measured out to you, and still more will be given to you. To the one who has, more will be given. From the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away." Jesus said to his disciples, "Is a lamp brought in to be placed under a bushel basket or under a bed, and not to be placed on a lampstand? For there is nothing hidden except to be made visible. Nothing is secret except to come to light. Anyone who has ears ought to hear." He also told them, "Take care what you hear. The measure with which you measure will be measured out to you, and still more will be given to you. To the one who has, more will be given. From the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away." Jesus said to his disciples, "Is a lamp brought in to be placed under a bushel basket or under a bed, and not to be placed on a lampstand? For there is nothing hidden except to be made visible. Nothing is secret except to come to light. Anyone who has ears to hear ought to hear." He also told them, "Take care what you hear. The measure with which you measure will be measured out to you, and still more will be given to you. To the one who has, more will be given. from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. Coming back to our bodies, back to sensation, breath, heartbeat. We bring our attention to the room. Good evening. Thank you all for being here tonight. My name is Beverly. So, what did you hear in that scripture passage? Catherine, thank you.
When I heard the phrases about what you measure out, you get back, what came to mind about that were a couple things, but one was valuation of the work. Mm-hmm. And when we value it, it's ours to keep. Mm-hmm. And then I also heard in that measuring part that, you know, it could be also interpreted as making accounts. When we're measuring out accounts against someone else, those are the things that get that we're charged with that we hadn't seen.
Yes, thank you, Jackie. Let's use this microphone.
On the measuring part, I heard that your being is drawing your life and in the work to grow your being is a great object of the work, that the quality of life improves as the quality of one's being grows. And I also heard I can work, that this is the work of effort. And that it is all valuation, the whole enterprise.
Thank you. Catherine.
I also heard your being draws your life. And I heard yes over and over and over. Starting with, why do you bring the lamp out? To put it under a bush? No, to put it in the lampstand. And I thought, how often I have an opportunity to shine light, but whether it's fear or whatever, there it is under the bush. Say yes to putting it in the lampstand. And then those that have ears to hear should hear. If we've been gifted with ears, how often because of useless acting out in fear or mechanical separation or whatnot, we close the ears. We don't say yes to the listening and the opening. And it just made me think, when you say yes, your being has so much opportunity to draw far beyond our imagination. So my wish is to stay awake and say yes.
Thank you. Frank?
I heard the beginning. By the beginning, I mean the first half of the reading, when it speaking about things that are there to be observed, to be uncovered, to be talking about observation. And then when it said, be careful what you hear, it seemed to me it went right into self-remembering. Remember what this is about, who you are, and don't be judging.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Jackie, you want to add something?
I also recognized experientially the experience of the coming down of buffers, that up to the moment when they come down, you're in darkness and you don't know it. And suddenly there is light. Yes. Who would have guessed up to that time? And the experience is such, and it creates such force and energy, that the next time you welcome the opportunity for the coming of that light, you would not put the lamp under the bed. Mm-hmm. But there must be effort.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah. Jill.
I also heard about force, that there's an amount of force and we're given it, and we can piss it away or we can grow it by non-identifying and self-remembering. And what we're given by giving it away and by using it grows, and it gets us in this flow. And I felt that this morning when there was a prayer request, and I just responded to it and was just feeling so much love for this person. And I actually sent a little email to him and said that, and got something back, and it was like I just felt it growing, and I felt that connection of being in the flow. And then I also heard about nothing, that everything that's hidden will come to light. It's meant to come to light, and that's how we increase our force, by working and by bringing the light of consciousness to all the dark places, and that releases all this negative energy that we're tamping down and frees it up to get us back in the flow.
Yes.
Connected with Source. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I heard, take care what you hear. Except I heard it more like, take care how you hear. And because it seemed like it was very much next to about the measuring, which made it sound like judgment to me. Because if I'm not giving myself the first conscious shock, not bringing the work up to incoming impressions or what I'm hearing, then it's very easy for it to be negative or judgmental or just mechanical. So take care. It wasn't like be careful or don't, you know. The whole passage felt very gentle to me too. So just take care, and the light will reveal everything. And just, it all felt like, oh, okay, yeah. That's the way it's supposed to be. No big deal. What else? Rusty, you look like you want to say something. No. Like, yeah. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. So, last week Peter gave us a good homework. He read a passage from commentary in volume 4 on fantasies or imagination. I'm just going to read a little bit of it. This is on page 1370. There is such a thing as rightly directed imagination, or as we would say, directed imagination, and such a thing as loose imagination, which is what keeps negative states going. That is why it is said that when you are negative, it is such a struggle with imagination, trying to get things right, because imagination will suggest all sorts of things that never really happened. So his homework was observe, identify where imagination contributes to negative emotions. So, who would like to start us off on that one? Where do you see imagination and negative emotions connected? Lisa, let's use this microphone here, back in the back row.
I think what came up for me, and I'm new to the work, so I'm not going to be prolific with my language, but I definitely had an opportunity to see my personality, the history of my negative imagination manifest. I had an opportunity to go to the Paramount and see Ruthie Foster. And I intentionally don't go hear live music because I get really depressed because of my negative imagination of what I could have done with my talent. How I could have, I should be up there, but I'm not. Just like, and I was so aware going in to see Ruthie Foster of my homework that Peter gave us. So it was this amazing experience for me to hear the voice, but it was so much quieter than it's ever been. Didn't go away, but the observer in me was able to go, oh, there you are. There you are. And if I could see this from Christ consciousness, where I am Ruthie, and Ruthie is me, yes. And praise be to God that she's singing me, I'm singing her, and all of a sudden I was just filled with such joy. And she would stop singing, she'd look at the audience and she'd say, did y'all feel that? I was like, yeah, I finally did. So it was a joining with instead of a separation. It was a real gift to me.
Yes. And that joining was through actually the separation of non-identification with your negative imagination. And it sounds like you got to the self-remembering place of being one with her.
I did. Yeah. I did. And I also actually appreciated that I knew it wasn't mature. Like, my experience was very young. Like, wow, I have so much work ahead of me. You know, it didn't last very long. But it was a beginning, you know. I now know what's possible, and it really made me grateful.
Yes, and you had that taste, and so you can remember that. I had something similar because I have that those eyes in me, the same thing. I've always, no matter what I've done, I've always wanted to be a singer. And I had an experience once in a concert. I was singing in the big choir. It was Messiah, and there were these soloists. And the soprano came out. I mean, she sang. And it was, I had this sense of being her. Like you, and I could imagine it. It was like I was doing that. I had a visceral experience of coming out in a concert hall, no fear, just the joy of sharing the music with everyone. No self-consciousness. It wasn't about me. It was about the music. I experienced that, and which is something I've wished for my whole life. I've never really had, except in that imagination. That's directed imagination, as opposed to just the daydreaming imagination. So, and it was that same kind of experience that you had, and it was just, oh, that's what it's like. You know, that's, and it could be, and it is, because I, you know, what's real here, you know? So it was a really blessed experience, and I remember that. I can always go back when it starts doing its thing and being nervous or self-conscious and all that blah, 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 or why didn't I, you know? I can go back to that. Oh, yeah. We're all one here. We're all one. Thank you. Jackie.
I was really struck with the constancy of mechanical imagination. That it is a default position, and it includes the mechanical things like I get in my car and I turn on National Public Radio, and there's a honing device that is scanning for impressions that it can latch onto to judge. So those are always negative, to be angry at, to be resentful of, any related negative emotion. So any time, the times when that's not happening is when there's directed attention going on. So if I'm in a real project at work and I'm attracted and directed in it, that all goes away. I don't even notice I'm in directed attention until I'm pulling out of it. And that's when I go back to the default position. I go to my cell phone and I pull up CNN. Because it's feeding something on these habitual negative emotions. Mm-hmm. And it's, if you take all of that over the course of an hour a day, it is exhausting, and it totally isn't being non-present. I was stunned at how non-present I was most of the time. And this commentary also talked about the differences between dreaming at night, dreaming asleep, and fantasies or daydreams, in terms of no second force in daydreams. And I actually had that experience as I pondered that commentary this week. I woke up and I was worried suddenly about something in my day for the following day. And experientially, I know to go to prayer or to go to a scripture that I have memorized that allows me to have directed attention and brings me back to center and peace so I can go back to sleep. As opposed to going off then on that imagination. So it was, in a way, a depressing week because it was so constant.
So when you're in the car listening to the news, what work game could you do with that if you're aware of it?
Well, one of the work games that I do when I'm conscious enough to do it is to like what it hates, to see with effort what the other side is. And actually, because I was so focused on imagination this week, I was able to do that today. And I shocked myself that I could actually see the other side without judgment. In a "I wonder" kind of a way.
Yes.
That was the exception, however, to the normal rule.
Right. Well, yeah. Imagination is mechanical. It's like you were describing, so.
Or I could go to the non-CNN place, but I rarely do that.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I always find that very useful to try to argue the other side, to see, externally consider, to see that. I that's a very useful piece of work, especially with something we're really identified.
It really occurs to me that the combination of the work and centering prayer in terms of the disciplined is they work well together, amazingly.
Yes. Very much so. Thank you. Billy.
So I have this recurring imagination that I really try to pay attention to. And it is, I can't figure out. Well, let me restate that. I am really happy. I'm very, very happy. And I start imagining that another shoe is going to fall, you know, because I've done nothing to deserve to be this happy, this joyful in my life. You know, quite the contrary. So... it was very interesting to try to kind of get in touch with that, and I had some help with it, and it goes back a long way, you know, a really long way. I mean, like to childhood, that far back, even though I thought it was something kind of new. But I noticed things like when I'm practicing or writing music or feeding my animals or doing something, and not busy work, not like I'm trying to just find something to do, but something that I really need to do or enjoy doing or whatever, all of that goes away. And it's only when I'm kind of lost in my day and not knowing what am I going to do today, or maybe even I'm just sitting down to relax for a moment, and that can sort of flood, and I go off on, oh my gosh, something terrible is going to happen, I'm going to get really sick, or I'm going to eat something, there's something that's going to happen. And today I started thinking, is there anyone that I don't think deserves happiness? You know, even my worst enemy, even the politicians that I can't stand, or any, do I think they deserve to be unhappy or don't deserve happiness? And no. I don't. I really want everybody to be happy. I don't care what they do mm-hmm. or have done. Because, oh my goodness, I know how much better things go for me and my family and my friends and people I meet. I had people come to the door the other day that I, you know, in a previous time would have just chewed out because I have a no soliciting sign on my door. Mm-hmm. And they were there to read me scripture.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's not solicitation.
That's exactly what they said.
Yes, right.
I corrected them and then I caught myself and decided I don't need to do that. They're just out here trying to do what they think is helpful and good.
Yes.
And it completely changed everything. But noticing that, how negative it is and how it takes over when it happens, mm-hmm. but that I can actually stop it. And I also learned that what it boils down to is a lack of trust, because I seem to think I'm in control. And if I turn it over and trust, then I have to relinquish what I think is control. And up here, I know that's not true, but sometimes it doesn't filter through.
Yes.
So that's it.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Do you get to the point where you there's some I that believes that worrying will keep those bad things from happening?
Oh, yeah.
That's a funny thing. Yeah.
Is it on?
Yeah.
Yes, very much. And if something bad does happen, I think, see?
Right.
I had a reason to worry.
Yes, I was justified.
I was justified in my worry. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. The other shoe dropping. Oh, that's so familiar. Oh, yes. Catherine, thank you.
I was in the midst of a recurring argument at my house, and I was having the judgment that the other person was argumentative and critical and starts it, and that this poor person, the imagination is that I'm the nice person. And that I'm not argumentative except for having to defend myself when falsely accused. Why is everyone laughing? And so I had this realization that the homework had come to show me something. That I had just finished saying something that was provocative and didn't need to be said. And then there was an answer, and then it was time for this one to say the next argument, and I did. I'll confess to that. But at the moment, I thought, oh, this is what they're talking about. I'm imagining that I'm falsely accused, and then there's where the negativity comes in. Mm-hmm. Not that arguing could have been, you know, happy and positive, but it had that element of one-sidedness that in this one's imagination, it was, you know, the Miss Piggy, I, moi, you know, I'm the nice one being falsely accused. So mm-hmm. That was a good one to see.
Yes.
I'll see if it helps me the next time.
Future memory.
There you go.
Thank you. I woke up just, wow, in a real funk this morning, and just depressed. The self-flagellation eyes were really active, and I was listening, and I was thinking, why? What started this? What imagination? Because the mind was just blah, 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 blah. It was roiling with negativity about myself and my life. And I realized, I think where it started was I had gotten a message from a health practitioner that I had canceled an appointment on. I had gotten very confused. Anyway, this story, I had gotten very confused about the whole thing. I canceled the appointment because of my fear around finances. And anyway, this message from her was she was not pleased that I had canceled, that we wanted to have a plan going forward and blah, 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 blah. And what I realized was my imagination was, I'm a bad person. I really screwed up. And because the other side of this is my imagination is that I'm so with it and I made such a good decision. But then it was like, no. And that was like, oh, you know, the ego was bruised. But it was just this imagination that, A, I couldn't make any mistakes, and B, I did, and so I'm a piece of, yeah. And that's what started it. But then it continued through, you know, I didn't catch it then. I really didn't work with it then. And so it just created this whole just negative milieu for me state for the whole morning. And it was just, I mean, the imagination, the thoughts, the beliefs just piled on top of that. You know, my life is too hard, it's too complicated. But I mean, it was just like they were piling on. And finally, I sat down and I did some inquiry around one of them, and then they all just kind of cleared. I also changed centers. That's another way for me. I went outside, and that helped. I took a walk. I tried to look around me without any associations, and that helped a little bit. But it was good to see, because when I'm in imagination like that, what I see is that my breathing gets really shallow. When I was walking, I constantly caught myself just looking down. It was back there again. So you pull the shade down. Okay, look up, look up, look up. You know, back in it, and just got to see through looking at that just how self-focused and the imagination just the negativity. It narrows the vision down to this little pinhole. Can't see anything. Can't see anything good. And when I'm there, and I'm only, you know, at the top of depression or negativity, I can see. I was telling my friend this morning, my work partner, that I can see why people kill themselves. Because when that pinhole gets so small and it's only on you, you know, it's, you can't see anything else. You are totally separate from everything. And so I totally could understand why people go there. It was all caused by imagination. In other words, what I was thinking and believing. It's like Byron Katie says, other than what you're thinking and believing, like Peter said, are you okay? Yeah, I'm fine, except for what I'm thinking and believing. She says, post-it notes. I was thinking, everything, the whole world was covered with post-it notes this morning, blocking the view of reality. You know, it was just what I was thinking and believing. That was it. Otherwise, the birds were chirping. It was a nice day. It was lovely in my neighborhood. My life was fine. The floor was supporting me. My stomach was, I mean, there was nothing wrong. It was just what was going on up here in the imagination. It was all just imagination. So to me, it just rules. It rules until we realize we wake up, and then we can step back and see what's going on, separate, non-identify, and self-remember back to this, right here, right now, in this present moment. Anyone else? Good. I'm glad everyone else was out of imagination this week. No one else saw imagination. Okay. All right. Well, thank you for your sharing. Okay. So one thing I did want to tie into that, and I'm not opening this to show you pictures of my new granddaughter, but what I did want to read from, this is from Monday's email from the journey, spiritual journey. How many of you are participating in that, getting the emails? Great, wonderful. Are you keeping up? Yeah, two emails, and it feels like a lot. It's funny. But anyway, at the end of that email, so it was talking about our attitudes towards God. Just kind of like our imagination, too, about God, right? It said, what attitudes toward God might you have that get in the way of an ever-deepening relationship with God, and then by extension, all of life? So I was just curious if anyone can share what gets in your way. What imagination about God or what your attitudes are inhibiting your relationship? Yes, Jane.
This is something I've been sort of struggling with, and maybe it almost feels embarrassing because I don't feel like I can grasp what God is. And so if I'm supposed to love him with all my heart, what is it that I'm loving? I mean, and it's like if any thought about God is not God. And so I'm struggling to love something that I can't describe. There isn't substance to it that I can direct my exact thoughts to. So I've got two things going. One is I've decided that God is gravity. It's what holds me to this earth. It's always present. It hugs me. It's all around us. And so that was the one thing that I could kind of think of that was, I can't see it. I know it's there. And then the other thing is that if God is in all of us, then I guess loving God is not maybe specific. I'm not trying to pin it down, but it's in every person and every animal and everything that I see. But it seems very, very big. So I don't, because of that, I think I don't feel like I have a close relationship, a one-on-one, because it isn't, it's so beyond that. So anyway, words are hard to describe this, but that's kind of what I think is I'm dealing with in terms of feeling like I have an intimacy.
Yes. So, did you have different picture of God as a child?
No. The only negative thing I thought is I was in Sunday school. I was a Methodist church, and the minister came into my Sunday school class and said, "You need to love God more than anybody else. You need to love Him and." You need to, he's God the Father, but you love him more than your own father. And I can remember I raised my hand and I said, "I am sorry, but I don't love God more than my father. My father's great and I really love him." And that image was too for it. And I look back as a child, you love your parent. What would you love more than that at that point? Mm-hmm. I couldn't understand. That's the only other negative thing that I could think of. But I think, I moved past that.
Mm-hmm. But. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds familiar, what you're saying. Yeah, I think we get to a point where we want to love God with our hearts, and yet our minds are still trying to define God. And yeah, wait, that's not the same thing, though. You know, so but yeah, we want to quantify, we want to explain, we want to have something graspable. Yeah, it's good to hold, though. Good question. Oh, Rusty, and then Alan.
I mean, I was raised with a God. It was somebody that you had to please, mm-hmm. And I definitely had the vision of the silver-haired guy up in the heavens, and again, that wonderful contradiction, you know, of he loves you, but you know, in my mind, it was like you had to earn that love, and so you're always falling short. And so that was definitely a limitation, you know, that you carry, you know, without having it challenged or anything else. And it's just there. And to me, so much of, you know, the things that have opened up is the, you know, again, this idea, and it sounds very cliche, but of God is love. And I was almost thinking, how do you love something you can't understand? Well, love might be a way of thinking about it. And what better thing to love than love? Mm-hmm. And there's also just this notion, I think we have this tendency, I have this tendency of objectivizing, of it being an entity.
Yes.
Of some sort. And I think that's an incredibly limiting way of viewing this idea, you know, of God, and something that helps a little bit of just thinking of God as a verb versus a noun. Mm-hmm. And it just opens up a little something. It's not much, but it opens up a little something that kind of softens this notion of what I was raised with, of having this entity to please. Or all hell would break loose.
Yes. Thank you. Alan and Anana and Jackie.
I think it's a combination of factors. Like the first one was from materialist view, that is material reality. So what is it that I'm loving? You know, where is it? It's hard to understand. And then what Rusty was talking about, merit. You know, I don't think I'm worthy or loving, lovable unless I'm worth it. Mm-hmm. So that's that fallacy. And then there's also the one I was thinking about. From the work idea. I have this belief that I can do, that is, I'm God, what do I need? You know, so there's probably, if you ask 3 or 4 more people, you get 3 or 4 more different ideas. But I think it's just a combination of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
We're stuck.
Thank you. Anna?
For me, it was similar to Rusty, but more like God did not love me unconditionally. It was a punishing God. Lots of guilt. It was a Catholic upbringing. Just the confession part of it and the guilt. And so with it came shame about anything I did. And now I like to think of the prodigal son and how he was received by his father. And that is really how it is. God loves us just as we are. And it's working with that constantly. And maybe my favorite work idea from the beginning was to non-critically self-observe. So it's kind of with that same idea of always judgment and conditions to be loved. So
yes, thank you. Jackie?
I don't have childhood associations with God. I was not raised with a practice. And I had a desire for it always. And so my experience of God, for the greatest part, began when I came here. And just the sound of Father Keating's voice to me is the sound of God, really, mm-hmm. for me. It's interesting that I'm comfortable in that relationship. It's people that I'm not comfortable with. Mm-hmm. That's true. And with all the treasures we have here, I have faith that God's got my back. So events happen, and invariably, as I observe myself, I have a level of acceptance. This God needs me to experience this in trust. Mm-hmm. But then I have to deal with these pesky people.
Yeah, if it could just be plants and animals, it'd be great. Except my cat, and that's. Oh. Even Billy, and then Catherine.
Oh shoot! I think the reward and punishment thing is certainly what I grew up with. I was very fundamental Baptist, and if the doors of the church were open, we were there day in and day out, seemingly. And I think for me, I've had this notion that if God really loved me, he wouldn't let bad things happen to me. And I think that's where trust has become an issue, because in my hometown, where I grew up, the people who were supposedly the most righteous and religious, from what I could see and from what I was taught and observed, were the ones who really had all the money and all the power and all the control in the community and in the town. Because this was a town of 10,000 people, and at the First Baptist Church, that was a membership of about 3,000. So everything was run mm-hmm. by that. The schools, the city council, everything. And, yeah, it came down pretty hard when I was 17 and was pregnant. I had to leave town because of the severe punishment of, you know, I was going to be made an example of. So... having this experience of, well, wait a minute, you know, God clearly doesn't love me because I'm too much of a sinner and I have to be punished. And so it's taken most of my life still working on that level of trust and understanding that no, it doesn't mean that just good things are going to happen to you, you know. Mm-hmm. It's all for whatever you need to learn in your life or how, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Catherine, back behind you.
After watching the video, a couple different attitudes really stuck out to me from just childhood beliefs. One being future. for the whole time growing up until here, I'm thinking, oh, heaven's in the future. You know, I do all this good, all this work here now, so when I get to heaven in the future after I die, it's going to be glorious. There's going to be angels everywhere, and they're singing. It's going to be amazing. And that's just so silly to me now. I'm like, oh my gosh. And then deep belief in separation. God is in this big golden chair in the sky, and here I am, little minute sinner, just running around trying to do good. Just mega separation.
Yeah.
And then I love how Father Thomas said the gavel and the judge.
Mm-hmm.
Because I definitely, there's still working through shame of just thinking, like Billy touched on, it's like, oh my God, I messed up. He's up there judging me. Oh my gosh, we're so separate. I don't deserve his love. I don't get his love. Oh man. And just deep wounds. So it makes me so thankful for the practices and the work here to open us to what is. And I'm so grateful.
Mm-hmm.
But I noticed a lot of attitudes, and when I saw the description attitudes, I'm like, well, I don't really have an attitude, you know. And then I'm like, wow, what a deep reflection and dissection of what attitudes are.
Yes.
And I definitely have some deep wounds of attitudes for sure.
Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. Anybody else?
Yeah, I would say that what stands in the way for me is my own tendency towards feeling unworthy of God's love, or, you know, my own self-loathing, or when I'm in that place. That's definitely keeps me separate. And also, like you were saying, Joan, that intimacy, the feeling of intimacy. When I was a child, I just had this real just love of Jesus. I don't know where it came from, but I just felt that all for a long, long time. And then, I don't know, I've just kind of threw Jesus out at some point. And with all the talk about Christ and, you know, Bernadette saying Jesus is dead, you know, So it's just interesting, not that the personal God, the impersonal God, all of that. It's trying to let go of concepts of God, so, you know, everything everybody described, it's experiences that we've had. So these deep beliefs, these wounds or traumas, but it's again, if those were all gone, you know, what would our relationship be like with God? And we experience that. I mean, a lot of us experience that during centering prayer. We're receptive, and we can feel the love of God. When we feel the love of God from each other, you know, it's like you were saying, Catherine, all the practices of the church, it's God loves us. We are loved. It's like you were saying, Anna, just as we are. So, but it's a good thing to keep looking at, I think. And there was another quote, just to move on from that, in the meditation. It was a quote from the Sevenfold Work from Bennett, J.G. Bennett. It is a very great thing to realize we have to learn how to permit superior forces to enter us. They cannot come into us unless we allow them. To allow them to come in, we have to be receptive. It is a difficult thing at first to come to, but we must understand the difference between passivity and receptivity. When we are passive, we are under the sway of lower forces, like imagination, daydreaming. We're just, yeah. But when we are receptive, we are open to what is higher. And this is the key to a great many practical problems of the work. And this idea of being receptive, that spoke to me. And I was doing my thing like I usually do, leaving preparation for this class the last second. And I'm at church today. I'm going, oh, I didn't bring any other books. I was rushing around. I had to be out in Lakeway, so I didn't want to drive home. And I brought volume 4. So I'm sitting in the library here in the praxis. So I'm like, okay, lots of books, lots of books. Speak to me. I need some inspiration. So I came across this book of Rodney Collin, The Theory of Conscious Harmony. Rodney Collin was one of Ouspensky's students from 36 to Ouspensky's death in 47. And then he kind of went on from there. But anyway, this book is a collection of his letters to different students and different people. So this is from a chapter called Requirements and Circumstances. And this first reading is from December 25th, 1948. He says, "Perhaps the most difficult and important thing is to learn to wait. And when one asks oneself what one is waiting for, one begins to realize that it is for a moment of stillness without attachment to the past or future." So kind of what we were talking about. No thoughts of the past or future with God. "For in such a moment, all kinds of exercises and perceptions become possible, which are never available when one is hurrying into the future or out of the past. It seems to us that the important times are those when much is happening, much is required, and one is hypnotized by motion." Hypnotized by motion. It's interesting. "It may be quite different. Now I begin to feel that all that is important comes in quietness and waiting, and that activity should be only the working out, the digesting and putting forth of what one learned, so that one may become empty again to receive more. That activity should be only the working out, the digesting and putting forth of what one learned, so that one may become empty again to receive more." Boy, that's a different picture of activity, isn't it? And then this was given February 18th, 1949. "Evidently, many ideas and new perceptions can come to us if physical and emotional strains and the motion of the mind are quieted. But it is not quite tension which is the obstacle. It is more than that, something like the whole momentum of life, identification with the rushing forward of time. Difficult to explain. Sometimes it happens that a great ordeal or a long fast or having a baby breaks this momentum, and then all kinds of new impressions enter that could never catch up when one was tearing into the future like an express train. I often think of the last years with Ouspensky. He would have two or three people sit with him, not doing anything, just sitting, smoking, occasionally making a remark, drinking a glass of wine, for hours on end. At first it was very difficult. One racked one's brains what to say, how to start a conversation, thought of all kinds of imaginary duties elsewhere. Many people could never bear it, but after a while these became the most interesting times of all. One began to feel, everything is possible in this moment. Let the past and future take care of itself. Some kind of momentum slowed down, and sometimes quite new ideas, a quite new connection with time and one's surroundings seemed to form. One was shown what it meant to be more free. Of course, one cannot create such situations without an Uspensky. One has to work hard and play one's role in life, probably without much sitting down. But innerly, I think it is possible to slow down this momentum, to accept what the present brings and live in that. From an intense sense of the present, it is possible to feel certain connections in the past and future. If one is not established in the present, then one is nowhere and nothing is possible. So I saw how that connects with this whole idea of imagination, because imagination is either about the past or it's about the future. It's not about the present moment. It's really about the past or future. Future images, past images. And so just I find the whole the idea of being in the present moment with no associations of imaginations of past or future. That's heaven, you know, that's the heaven that's here now, right? Any questions or comments on this? Yes, Jackie.
When you read that, it occurred to me that fantasy, either past or future, is probably 90% false, at least. Mm-hmm. Our memories are terrible. We tend to paint ourselves either up or down in a situation in the past. Mm-hmm. And I remember my dad, because I would fret about tests the next day, and my dad would say to me, 90% of the things you worry about never happen. And I'd forget that between then and the next test, and I'd be back in that same spot. Mm-hmm. So if we could just remember, put forward that future memory, that the things that drag us back or drag us forward are non-existent.
Yeah.
Why would you want to be there?
Right.
When you couldn't hear the birds in your neighborhood as you're walking.
Right. Exactly. Yep. Yeah, if you kind of take stock, it's, are you living? Are you here in the body? And that, it requires incarnation to be in the present moment, to be in the body, right? But are we? I'm mostly a walking head a lot of the time. It's just thinking about this, you know, judging this, that, it's just constant. And to the extent where I've seen that it's hard for me just to sit and do nothing. I'm not talking about centering prayer, that's different, but to just sit and relax. If I'm sitting and reading, for instance, in the evening, which like never happens, you know, Jim will come down and he'll say, oh, it's so nice to see you sitting there reading. It's like this unusual thing, you know, always having to have to go, and it's all caused by that. That what he said was rushing into the future. You know, always, it's either physically or mentally for me, often. Rusty.
I just had this memory come up, and it was being somewhere, ran into a fella that was a good friend during what, in my memory, in recollection, was a very dark period for me. And I was with a friend, and he started describing me to this friend in his memories. And it's like, God, I'd love to meet that person. I would love to meet that person. That sounds like a great guy, you know? And it's like, it was total. My memories of that could not have been further away.
Yep. My my children have talked about memories that they have. And I was like, huh? You know, or their opinion of us as parents, which is really good, you know, in my mind, I was, you know, failed miserably, of course. But just, we live in different worlds. We see with different eyes. Each one of us, our own little monad, you know, it's, yeah, I mean, it's funny. It's funny. And it's all these pictures we have from impressions, and yeah, yeah. And you get to meet yourself through other people. Tracy.
I have a bunch of scattered thoughts, but I'm going to try and make them somewhat coherent. Just to preface this with, I've been on like a, just sitting here in reflection, I feel like I'm on like this, I've been at this church almost a couple decades, and I feel like I'm on a pink cloud again, like a CCH pink cloud, like the cup just runneth over. And every day this week has just been too good. And
the shoe's going to drop?
No.
Too good. You said too good.
No, I hadn't even thought. No, oh, it's good. Just like, oh my God, it can be this incredible. So I got sent an article. It was actually sent by Tim about fathers. And it's really long. And I read most of it. And it didn't really grab me at the time, but about 2 days later, I started having this complete reframing of my dad, and it brought me to tears. And it was kind of like what you shared about the bar of soap.
Yes.
Well, I've got about half a dozen bar of soap times with my dad. But and that's all I have focused on, and the fear around that. But it's all of a sudden like, you know, a veil dropped or the curtain opened. It's like, oh my God, my dad had nothing but deep intentions to help bring me experiences that he thought were rich and beautiful.
Yes.
I mean, he just, that's really all he was about. And did he go cuckoo, you know, 10 times? Yeah, he went cuckoo 10 times. But most of it was a man who really wanted his daughter to have great experiences.
Yes.
And that's profound. I have never thought of him in that regard. Ever. Mm-hmm. Okay, that was one thing. And then the other thing was about now. So, Jill had led this service about a month ago, or right before Christmas, I think it was. And she added this little diagram in the bulletin. And without even seeing it, I knew I wanted to see it. And so I managed to get a copy, and I knew I wanted to spend time with it. I just, something in me just kept saying, spend time with this. So I stuck it on my refrigerator with a magnet, not knowing when I was going to spend time with it. Well, that time happened this week, and I was just standing there staring at it because I wanted to memorize it. And all of a sudden, I mean, it dropped out of nowhere. I call it my Dolly Parton moment. This is my second Dolly Parton moment because it's like she wrote all her own songs. She said they just dropped in. And I'm looking at the word aim at the very top. And all of a sudden, I realized that the three letters of AIM are the same letters of I am. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, oh my gosh. It's been right there the whole time. I don't know. It knocked my socks off. It was too cool. So anyway.
Wonderful.
I'm still taking deep breaths around it.
Yeah.
So that's what I have to share.
Thank you. Thank you. I loved what you said about your dad, too, seeing that. Another one of my favorite Byron Katie quotes is, she says, forgiveness is when we realize that what we thought happened didn't
happen. I'm sorry, but there were some really rough moments.
Well, but it wasn't, yes, yeah, that, yes. And, but you saw the other side as well.
The reality was there was a whole lot more goodness. I just have spent the last, you know,
right.
Most of my life focusing on those 10 incidents or whatever.
Right, right.
And I didn't see all the other ones.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I meant. You get to see the bigger picture. Yeah, how beautiful. Yeah, you've had a big week.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow. Wow, cool. Nicole, did you have your... Oh, you were just... okay. Anyone else? Okay, well, thank you so much. So, our homework to tie these all together is to practice receptivity in the present moment. So, finding the way to the present moment and practicing receptivity there. They kind of go together, I think. But didn't he say something like that? We began to feel everything is possible in this moment. Yeah. So how do we get to the present moment? You know, there, find your way to the present moment first. You know, for me, I know it's breathing, relaxing the body, feeling the body. I mean, even just doing that, I feel open and receptive, you know. But you might have other ways. So, does that make sense?
Yeah.
If the receptivity in the present moment feels too much, explore being in the present moment. What does that mean? How is it different than the way you usually live? Can we drop the imagination, the beliefs, all that, to be here now? In work terms, it's, you know, keeping your feeling of I here, again, being incarnated, present in the body, in all three centers, a three-centered experience of being here now. Okay, you find your other ways using work ideas. Okay, any questions? All right, so let's, okay, again coming back to our bodies relaxed. Dropping out of the head into the heart and into presence, a total three-centered presence here now. And we take any green tithes and offerings we might have, or just the tithes and offerings of our gratitude, being questions, anything that we have to offer here. And we remember together that God's love has always met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully, and how blessed we are to simply remember God. aware now of the amazing abundance that surrounds us for all we've been given here in our lives, this amazing, beautiful earth and the cosmos. We dedicate and consecrate these tithes and offerings to the gift of consciously chosen love in each of our lives and on this beautiful planet, over the lie of separation and our useless acting out from fear. In Christ we pray. Amen. Have a great week in the present moment.